in the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this time, Mr. Rosner will present the Elmont Elementary budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, first, this budget process starts very, very early. We meet with our principals, our directors, and this has been an interesting year because there have been some increases that were out of our control, such as health benefits. Tom, how much do we have to absorb in increases?
1.3 million.
We went line by line with our school principals and our directors to make sure that we have to address that. We can't just go to the community with an increase simply just because it happened to us. So that was early on in this process.
Yeah.
We were able to absorb that. The bottom line is that we're coming in with a negative tax levy for our community. It is one of only two districts on Long Island that is able to do that. We should all be proud of that. A lot of hard work going into that. I thank Mr. Galante. I thank my team for really taking a look at the way we spend and the patterns that we've seen through the years. And also kind of trying to anticipate, which is very hard to do, what will be happening over the next 4 to 5 years, as we always do 5-year planning. So, once again, I think the community should be proud that this is a board and a team that is fiscally responsible to the community that we serve. And again, one of only two districts that, along with Freeport, that was able to lower the tax levy for our community. And that is very, very important during challenging times. But during any time, that if you have some fat in the budget, that we need to address that. And I think that's an ongoing process that we have. So the board is fully aware, or should be anyway, of all the line items within the budget. We answered some questions by email, and if there's anything else that we could address, please let us know. I do want to thank our friends here in the audience for being here and showing support for the board and for this process. It's a very tedious process. But one that's important, as our major role is to be the fiduciary gatekeepers, if you will, for the community that we serve. Does anyone have any specific questions? I mean, Mr. Galante has spent a lot of time with me going through this, but he's our expert, so here's our chance to just kind of close anything out. If anyone has any questions as a board, please let us know.
So in terms of the 5-year projection, where do you see the most increased cost that the district will entail, and how can we start mitigating those increases?
If the current trend continues for the next 5 years, the best way to try to frame it, health insurance and special education. And those are two of your biggest budgets, which is why they, as a management, the health insurance budget now is, so I've got, like what you see on these sheets, I've got 20 years of expenses and little hidden spots, because I use the same file, I've been using it for 20 years. And like some of them are really amazing when you look back historically, where the health budget is 12.9 million for next year.
Can you give us the page number, please?
The very last page. 12.9 million for next year out of 111. You do the math on that, which is like 12% of your budget is going to health insurance. For active staff and retirees. And if you went back, say, 20 years ago and looked at the sheets for that, you'd see it was about half. Percentage-wise, it was like half of what it is now. So and we get, say, a 13-14% increase in that budget from state premiums, with it being twice the impact it used to be, that is a cost driver now in a big way.
One of the things that Ms. Cabell and I and our team have done is that we have five-year plans for curriculum and instruction. We have five-year plans for facilities. That's not only mandated, but something that we have tackled over the last few years. And we are creating a plan now for special education. Ms. Cabell and I have been going to many of the private schools, BOCES schools, and looking at what students can come back to us at a major cost savings to the district. So we're building that plan to address what you've been speaking about. These are costs that have been rising now for many, many years. And it's to your point, which is, what are we doing to mitigate that? And my compliments to the team for really looking at every angle of how we could save money and bring children back into our district and keep those costs under control. And that's what we're looking to do.
Well, you have the impact of the pandemic, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's still impacting on children's needs, So like when we say the word special education, right, it's students who need, it's not just kids, say, going off to BOCES for a special program, but it's just kids coming in for remediation and so forth.
Right. And those are our friends on either side of Ms. Cabell, who are working with our student support teams in the buildings and making sure that when a child comes to child study team, that we're using our response to intervention in our classrooms, making sure that that's a general education initiative before it gets to that next level. And that's our responsibility instructionally to make sure that, right, there's a process, there's a law, there's something in place that's RTI, response to intervention, and that's what we need to do, is strengthen that general ed core program to make sure that we're addressing those needs before it gets to a major cost increase. Now, if a child needs it, the child needs it. We don't stop those things. But there are things that we can do to mitigate this.
The needs tend to go in waves, too. There was this little wave chart, bar chart that I sent up. That went back like 22 years, back to 2000. But it was really kind of, you saw this kind of come up and then from way down, and then it started to work its way up. It's demographic thing in some ways, but that's an area where, like, when you look at special ed, you find the page number. And the reason I mention that is simply because, so our special education program, not including employee benefits, this is staff, supplies, and textbooks, right? It's $21 million. Budget, $20.7 million. You add in the fringe benefits of the employees, you add in the state grants we receive specifically for special ed, close to $30 million.
Sure.
So that's a big, so cost driver wise, I'd say that's an area that, and it's regulated, there's all kinds of requirements on what the district has to do. I would say those two are the big ones, those are the big ones. Pension kind of goes up, comes down, that kind of rolls a little bit for us, so it's not too bad. And sometimes it does come back off on what the state rates are, if the market's been good and things like that. I would say those are the two items that historically every year, so if I were going out 5 years, that's the area. Now on the positive side is New York State does generate, we do get state aid, but they contribute a share specifically for special education costs. So that's good there. So when our costs go up a dollar, we'll get back about half of that in aid. So it does help some there, but.
So what formula drives that reimbursement, special education reimbursement aid?
It's based on our wealth. There's the combined wealth ratio that's a part of that, which is how we compare to other districts in the state on average for the average property value and the average income, family income. And then actual payments. So first it's what's your wealth ratio, which drives how much you get reimbursed per student per se. And then it's actual costs from there. So if a child goes off to BOCES and it's a certain, let's say it's $125,000 for that student, we do receive back aid on that. But it'll depend on the services. It's all specific to the services. I could run the numbers, but on average, I would say we're getting back about half.
How many students we have in BOCES currently?
45. Something like that, 40, 45, something
can
like
I
that.
We can get an action number.
33.
45, thank you.
Ms. Cabell said 33.
I know, I got it. I said that's different from 45. Thank you.
So in terms of fringe benefits, the only recourse in terms of the Board of Education is to when we are negotiating contracts.
And the difficulty there is that the district uses NYSHIP, the state health insurance program, which is really what just about every district in the state uses.
So what are, in terms of that, what are our other options that we could explore?
You could look to explore. They have a plan that's the Empire plan, which is what we offer. They also have a lower value plan. And you could go out and try and like go to other carriers. But in order to do that, you need to negotiate that first. But the good thing about it, I guess, in some ways, is when our cost goes up a dollar, put it this way, when our cost goes up 12%, the employee cost goes up 12%, and the employer share goes up 12%, right? Because there's a cost share going on. So there is an invested interest there, but I know that in discussions in the past, that has not had any traction in labor negotiations.
Well, have we ever plotted out, if you switch, this is the savings you would realize? I don't think we've ever done that.
No, because we need to go through a whole process to kind of like bid it out and get prices. The advantage of the state plan is it's every town, every village, county, New York State is huge. It's probably the biggest plan in the state. When you think of all the municipalities that are part of it along with the state, the drawback is it's a Cadillac Plus plan. It's a Maserati plan. You know what I mean? It's a very expensive plan.
Understood.
$38,000 for a family plan.
So I think we should.
Now my brother's business, they pay $52,000 for a family plan, but it's gold.
So we should probably explore trying to figure out how to plot that out.
Yeah.
For the future. In terms of our enrollment, I know we've been discussing that enrollment was decreasing.
Yeah.
So is that trend, are we still going to be on that trend within the next 4 to 5 years?
That would be in the study, which I don't have handy right now, but we have a study that was done that looked at birth rates and so forth. I can tell you that it's fallen off a lot in the last like 3 to 4 years,
yeah.
Right? But this year it didn't. It was, I don't think there was a dramatic change, at least that I noticed when we were doing the principal's budgets and stuff, which is enrollment driven. But what the trick with that is, when you lose a certain number of kids, depending on the grade and the school, and it can take some years before that can turn into true cost savings. I'm at the staffing level, which is what sitting down with Ken, it's about 11, it was 10 or 11 positions, we were able to identify that we could cut back on, which helped.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Arms up.
Thank you. I just choked.
Tom numbers are taking you down.
So, in terms of what you were saying just now about it takes us a couple of years to realize staffing shifting, why is that, that it takes us that long?
Well, you might have, in a certain school, in a certain grade, you might have, say, 96 students. And in order to go from, say, 5 classrooms to 4, you need to get to a certain level to meet your policy on class size. So it really it takes a few years of it degrading, really, before you can say, okay, we're only going to have 4 sections instead of 5 here. You know?
We look at that as part of the cost savings.
That was the first thing Ken and I did in December, right? The health rates had just come through. We knew we were going to have a challenging budget, and we met with the principals to go through all the enrollment projections with them for next year and how that translated into sections at each school.
The wild card is the kindergarten.
Yeah.
You really know
what's coming in.
It's coming in, so you have to be ready for that.
So, just following your lead of what you said, we don't necessarily see change in, but we don't see the change in enrollment, it doesn't affect the pricing. How do we take the numbers that we report for, that we remove for residency and turn that into dollar amounts? Because all of those kids aren't in the same class where we could say, like in this report, it says 26 students. That's not one class. So how are we calculating that number if it's not?
Oh, that's simple and easy. Okay. That is, how many of those students are special ed that I get from Fernando, and he has an estimate of that. So let's say it's 7 out of the total.
Okay.
And then we provide the state with all of our cost data each year, and then they generate what they call a non-resident tuition rate. So basically it's the student count times our billable non-resident tuition rate for the state, which is the same rate that we would bill other districts for, say, foster students and so forth. So that's how that gets calculated out.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a quick, easy calculation.
Tom, would you do me a favor? We'll all get questions, and this will be up on the website once this is approved.
Yeah.
Can you explain in simple terms, and I say that for me, how an increase in the change of budget, the percent increase went from, let's say, 98 to 111? Without raising the tax levy. Can you explain the increase in budget to budget and what you did to create that increase?
Yeah.
And why?
Yeah. Primarily, well, there's a number of pieces to it, but I would say the biggest helper for us to have a tax levy that's going down just a shade with spending going up is New York State aid and the state adopting a couple of years ago that they were going to fully fund foundation aid, which has been something that's been on the been out there for years and years and years. So last year we had the largest increase ever in state aid, and this year they topped it, at least with the runs that we saw that the governor proposed, which was a $4.1 million increase in aid. And based on, we don't have the actual runs to know what our number will be this year. They haven't adopted yet. But based on the percentage that the legislature was looking to add to the education budget to governors, that was about another $500,000. So this budget has $4.6 million of additional money in state aid to help cover spending, which is the primary driver on the budget. Yeah, that's in here.
That's not part of the 4.6.
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah, we haven't received the payment. There's a lot of, well, I mean, I could go through all the pieces.
How much they owe?
Well, we're still working on the agreement.
Oh.
So until the agreement is signed, we shouldn't even discuss it.
Yeah. There's a lot of pieces to the puzzle, though. Here's another one for you. interest income, which you would never really think of, right? But when rates were like 2 years ago, a year ago, when it was like 0.001 on a checking account or an investment account, right? We would generate about maybe $50,000 of interest income on our bank accounts and stuff. And we're at $700,000 next year. So it's becoming, which I have to say is more of a normal trend. If I went back, say, 10, 20 years ago, you know, we were getting 4%, 5% on our bank balances, and it was $500,000 back then. So we're getting back to that level. But that's a helper. That's about 1% off the levy there, because the levy is around $55 million, so 1% of that is $550,000 roughly. So if you got interest income coming in of an extra 600 plus, there's 1% off the levy there. So those are, those elements are a big part of why we're able to say, yes, spending's going up. But the thing I have to say is, if you look at, you know, where the spending's going up, I think is an important thing, right? The spending's going up on primarily one-time expenses for your facilities. You know, it's, and each one of them has a cost savings element, short or long term, with renovating DPS to consolidate what is currently two buildings that have to be heated, and building security, custodial operational costs, right? So, you know, that's a long term thing though. You know, you'll save a little bit, but it'll be over tens and tens of years, and you'll also avoid a lot of cost of money that's would be otherwise be needed here in capital. And then having solar funded in there to expand solar to all areas of your roofs, that payback is going to be 2 to 3 years on your initial investment, and then you'll have almost 20 years of savings. And with our electricity costing us $700,000 now, once you put in the HVAC and so forth for all the buildings and get ventilation going, you're probably looking at $1.2 million, $1.3 million a year for your electric bill. You got at least $400,000 or $500,000 a year that you'll be saving on that, I'm sure, in future, each year in the future. So there's a lot of elements to this. It's not wild. It's not a wild budget. In every case, it's like things that will help generate some savings down the road. I should also point out, I'd like to say this, but this is just a budget. What you do every single board meeting is what drives the expenses, not this. This is just me putting together and estimating what you're going to do. You decide you're going to cut 20 people in September, there's extra money in the budget. You want to add 20 people in September, we'll be short of the budget. This is just a framework of me forecasting and, based on state law, a limit on how much you can spend if the public approves it, right? But throughout the year, you can modify this, you can adjust it, because guess what? Right now, we have no idea what the world's going to be like from July to June. We can best predict it, you know, which is what's here. We can assume we'll have the same custodial staff. We can assume we'll have the same drivers and so forth. All your labor contracts, more or less, are in place, which is good. So at least when it comes to what the cost is per person. But every board meeting, you pass resolutions to appoint people or not, you know what I mean? And your staff and benefit costs is 70-80% of your budget. So I mentioned that just because the staff part is the biggest part of your budget. There's a lot of lines here when you look at it, like supply lines, district-wide, you know, each school having lines per se, supplies for paper and so forth. So the budgets in those cases, it's all on the computer, it's controlled, right? They can't requisition, they can't order something unless there's enough in the line, right? So for the, all of that type of activity, the budget is a control function. But when it comes to the biggest parts of your spending, which is the staff and so forth, it's what you guys do every day, every meeting, is what drives this. It's not me. I'm just predicting what you'll do.
The forecast, yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Getting back to the interest income, do all of our accounts sweep on a nightly basis?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're getting right around a little over 4% now, too. And that's overnight money, so picture that.
Do they sweep to one account with the highest rate, or are we sweeping to multiple?
There's two things going on. The primary item, we've got TD and then we've got the Flushing Bank. Flushing has what I view as as good a program as you can get. Because what they do is they're out doing municipal securities and making deposits at gazillions of regional banks and banks around the U.S. at $250,000 or less. Mm-hmm. So they're able to pull in this 4% as of now, 4.2, I think, at last I saw, rate, which is much better than you'd find on your own for overnight money. We're not talking about a 6-month CD, 1-year CD, whatever, but overnight. But it's fully government secure.
Secure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyone else have any questions?
I do. The $6.4 million transferred to other funds, will you need a special proposition on the ballot for that?
No. The way schools work, it's all in what they call the Uniform System of Accounts for School Districts. And also it's in law, in state law, where the general fund, which is what the budget that goes to the public, right, is where you record taxes, state aid, and so forth that are specific to this. And then the state requires that. It also applies to villages and towns. Everybody has a capital fund, which is for building capital projects and construction. We also have the school lunch fund. We also have a special aid fund. We have a special revenue fund. Some municipalities have what's called a debt service fund to pay for debt service. But the way it works is those funds have to get funded.
So just basically, in essence, it's only the capital reserve. It's only the capital building reserve fund that needs voter approval.
Yes, if you were doing a reserve fund, correct, then that would need voter approval.
Right.
Except for proposition effect, yeah. Which is not what we have here, you know.
Yeah.
So we do it like every other district in the state or towns, villages, where what you do is you go to the public for your general fund budget, and then there is a line that says, here's how much we want to spend on capital. That gets transferred into the capital fund, its own bank account, accounting mm-hmm. records. And the state wants it that way because they want to be able to audit and look at all renovations, construction stuff, all at one spot. I guess that's why they probably have it that way. But it works the same way where we have our special aid fund. So that's why you don't see grants in here, right? Grant money that we receive, whether it's IDEA funding, Title I, Title III, Title IV, etc., that checks come in from the state, feds, goes into the special aid fund, there's a budget there, that's dispersed, that's not here either. So like all the stimulus funds. So this is the budget that the public must approve, which is separate from special aid. The public must approve, though, the reason they have this transfer amount, this amount is a limit of how much we can transfer to capital in the year based on it being in this document. And then also in budget dialogue, we have to have a description of what the capital would be used for, which we do each year. And we have a paragraph describing that.
That's
so
printed
you can get
on the
state aid. Pardon?
That's not printed on the ballot, is it? Where is that?
No, paper? It's in the budget issue with dialogue. It's also in, it's also right here.
So how are we printing that and saying that?
It's also right here on page 5. That'll be on the website. This gets mailed out to every single school, each one of our schools, as well as the public library has a copy for people to be able to access it, read through it.
Okay, so again, my question is, how are we printing that and committing to it in a dialogue if we haven't agreed on that yet?
We haven't done anything yet. We're creating it, waiting for the adoption, and then now we have our work to do to get that out.
So the dialogue has not been published yet?
I'm just giving you the sample that's in here. So all the language in here, it's double-checked, all the information that's in here.
That wasn't in my folder.
It's not there.
Because it's not published yet.
No, it's not. It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
I just heard you say, I'm giving you the sample.
As soon as everything is approved here tonight.
We have to approve it tonight in order for him to be able to release it.
But the language of it is in, I don't know.
Yeah, it's here too. It's what you guys got, you know, 2 months ago too, there, right? $12,239,479 for capital improvements. An increase of $6,464 compared to the current fiscal year. Capital improvements include the expansion and renovation of the Hempstead Turnpike facility. When completed, administrative operations at the Elmont Road building will be relocated to the Hempstead Turnpike facility to reduce building costs, security, and general operating costs over the long run to save tax dollars. And this will be going to the public, right? This is, once you guys adopt, this is on the website. It's out there, it's everywhere, so that's what I'm reading. In addition, the budget for capital improvements includes funds to expand the use of solar generation to reduce electricity costs, funding to improve school building interior security. That's the replacing all the doors on the inside, along with the latches, so that there's a lockdown button, and you hit a button, and boom, all the doors lock, right? And or the replacement of school playgrounds at Carlson and Stewart, and there was a survey that was done of all the playgrounds, and those two were deemed to need to get done right away as soon as we possibly can. And then also, but here's the caveat. There's a caveat here. The scope of projects will be determined after bid results for the bond funded projects, current year capital, and also impeachments next year. What I mean by scope is you're going to have decisions you'll have to make when once we have bid results for all these things, the bond project, these capital projects, you have. That's when it comes to you to say, are you going to award it or not? You follow me? So, and you might have to value engineer at that point if there isn't enough budget to cover what the actual costs come in at. Value engineer would be things like take a little bit of this out, a little bit of that out, but still accomplish the overall goal, okay? It might mean, when Frank does the work, I'm sure he's gonna, when they do, and Jason do the bids, I'm sure they're gonna do, like, here's the basics, and then, what if we had this alternates? Does that give some flexibility to say, okay, if the costs come in high, you know, that you can stay within budget. On the solar or the doors, it might be, okay, we're doing 3 out of 6 years with the money here if the costs come in a lot higher. Or let's say the HVAC comes in really high, which is possible on the bond work, right? Well, that means we've got less capital to work with over here, right? Because we can use some of this HVAC, you know, to help with the HVAC. So the point is when it gets down to bid award time is where the rubber kind of hits the road, when you know your costs. And we don't know any of those costs yet. We hope to know them last year, June, July or something.
Maybe? Yeah, maybe early. I had a meeting with them today.
Yeah. So that's it. Right now, these are just best estimates that are from the architect, you know, and what these projects will come in at. But nobody really knows.
Thank you.
Anything else?
So at this point it is 7:33. I will close the budget hearing and ask for a motion to go into public session for the purposes of approving the budget, adoption of the budget, adoption of the property card, the BOCES administration budget, the BOCES candidates, and then the assignment of special counsel. So at this time, I need a motion to go into public session.
Moved.
Moved Mr. Mafia, second Ms. Early Davis. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries. At this time, I will ask for a motion to adopt the budget as presented. And I guess I need to read the resolution. So be it resolved that the Board of Education adopt the proposed budget of expenditures of the Elmont Union Free School District for the school year 23-24 in the amount of $111,153,590 and present to the voters of the Elmont District on May 16th for approval by a majority of the voters on the voting day. Second, be it resolved that the Board of Education adopt the property tax report card, which contains the elements required by statute, and direct that the same be attached to the proposed budget made available the day of the vote and transmitted to the State Department by April 19th. So could I have a motion on those two items? Move, Mr. Mafia. Second, Dr. Cantara. Any discussion? All in favor? So we have six yeses and one no. Ms. Capers. Correct? So motion carries. The next two items are the BOCES administration budget for 2023-24 and the election of candidates for the BOCES school board that are running unopposed. So be it resolved that the board approved the Nassau BOCES administrative operation budget for the 23-24 school year in the amount of $25,220,812. Second resolution is be it resolved that the board cast one vote for the following candidates for election to the BOCES of Cooperative Education Service: Ms. Deborah Coates, Mr. Lawrence Greenstein, and Mr. Eric Schultz. Could I have a motion, please? Move, Ms. Garlick.
Second,
Mr. Mafia. Any discussion? All in favor? So we have six yes and one abstention, Ms. Capers. And lastly, the resolution to assign Curcio and Curcio as special counsel. Resolve that the Board of Education hereby assigns the defense of the matter of Luann Associates versus Nassau County et al., index number 600700/2023, to Curcio and Curcio as special counsel. Could I have a motion, please? Move, Mr. Mafia.
Second,
Ms. Garlick. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries. At this time, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn. Mr. Mafia, second, Ms. Early Davis. Any discussion? Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Have a good night. Just for Thursday will be no more than 10 minutes. Okay. No, it will, honestly. So, Dr. Valdez-Bertin?
What is the question? What time is that?
So,
because we have another board meeting.
No, we have a board meeting tomorrow night.
I'm talking about Thursday. That's Wednesday. Okay, tomorrow. What time again?
I have my
Westford. We can do seven. So,
we have Dr. Valdez-Bertin, Ms. Early Davis.
I don't know what the original time was. I already have another committee.